happened here. The rest were waiting to take the entire Legion back home to Earth.
Uh-oh. A breach. Tap this console with your key, please.
I hesitated. I saw the blinking yellow box on the board. One of the modules had turned off the lockdown. Right now, it was probably disgorging troops. Something had gone wrong. It could have been anything. Maybe the Primus had talked to the people back on the station. Or maybe they'd gotten a report from the men Claver had killed out in the hangar. Possibly the Imperator was back on the scene and had ordered them to arrest us. It didn't matter what had gone wrong, something bad. The situation was unraveling.
After all this shit, you're turning into a wimp on me at the last minute? Claver demanded. You want to get us permed, McGill?
Hissing through my teeth with regret, I reached out and tapped the console. Claver's hands flickered over the console. I didn't know how to operate it, but I knew it was an alien piece of hardware, a control system that the key in my hands had unlocked. Three of the stacked modules went red. Then they vanished from the stack.
What?
I demanded.
What did you do?
I let them go.
The troops have disembarked.
I stared at him in disbelief.
You jettisoned them? They're your own men, Claver. Your fellow legionnaires. These loyal men would die following your orders.
Old Silver shrugged, looking a tiny bit troubled.
You're right, he said. They would die for a Germanica officer. They're as good as dead right now, in fact, proving their loyalty once again. Look at it this way, McGill. It was them or us. The only difference is they would have permed us. We couldn't have kept this charade going much longer.
He was right, but I didn't like it.
What are you going to do next?
I growled.
Next comes the tricky part. I'm going to solve everyone's problems.
Chapter 28. Claver led me to the fire control center. On Minotaur, the control systems were oddly laid out. The bureaucracy of the Empire demanded it. Every species in the Empire had a monopoly on a given trade good. That trade good could be a service or a product. But within their local sphere of influence, such as Frontier 921, that particular product couldn't be duplicated. Some goods and services weren't available in an outlying province, and Frontier 921 was about as outlying as you could get. In that case, a world could trade for goods from outside their home province, but at an increased cost. The Empire's trade and legal systems worked, but they were often cumbersome. In effect, the system dictated that one planet could build ships, but they couldn't fly them. Another planet provided the piloting service. In our province, the pilots were all Skrull. That wasn't the end of it, however. The Skrull were only our locally licensed pilots on any interstellar vehicle, but they weren't warriors of any kind. Even if they'd wanted to be, it would have been illegal for them to participate in actual hostilities. So therefore, even though Minotaur had weaponry, the crew that piloted the ship wasn't allowed to operate that weaponry. To do so would have constituted a breach in galactic law. If the NERBs, who were our local legal system experts, sort of like lawyers, accountants, and bureaucrats all wrapped into one, determined the law had been broken, they might penalize the Skrull homeworld. Penalties could be as small as a fine and galactic credits, all the way up to and including annihilation of the offending species. Minotaur had a broadside bank of cannons on her armored flank, but the Skrull couldn't legally operate them. Fortunately, humanity was licensed to kill in other star systems, so we could fire the ship's guns. For the sake of convenience and to prevent any misunderstandings, the control system for these weapons wasn't located on the main bridge. It was built into a separate chamber on the decks below. It was to this region of the ship Claver was headed now. As we got close to the fire control center, my worries increased. Adjunct, I asked, you can't be considering firing on the station. If that's your plan, I'm not going along with it. There are millions of people, not to mention your legion and mine, living on that station.
Relax, he said.
I'm not crazy. I'm not trying to kill everyone in the system just to keep myself alive. That's not the goal here. Try to remember that you've personally killed more of their citizens than I have.
I winced, knowing his words to be true. My 88 had fried thousands by my best estimates. Those people weren't coming back, either. It had been in self-defense and under orders, but I still felt a little sorry for the Tau. "What are you planning?" I asked as we reached the big dilating doors that led into the control center.
"Just a sec," he said, standing to one side of the door. "There were crewmen stationed here the last time I checked it out."
He tried the lock, but it rejected his biometrics. His handprint and retinal scans apparently weren't in the security system. I was standing on the opposite side of the big door. We were both hugging the walls like two cops about to burst into a den of thieves. Kleber made a grasping motion indicating I should toss him the key, but I didn't budge. He made an exasperated sound and waved me to come over to his side. I did so reluctantly.
"Open this damn door, Specialist."
"No way. Not until I know what you intend."
"I told you I'm going to solve everyone's problems."
I frowned at him. "And just how do you intend to do that?"
"The holographic projectors, the ones every Tau seems to be wearing today, are malfunctioning. The truth is they've been tampered with. I happen to know where the source of the altered devices is. I'm going to destroy it from orbit."
"Aha," I said, pointing an accusatory finger at him. "I knew you had something to do with the riots. Let me guess. Did you sell them defective parts? Or was this all on purpose?"
Kleber shrugged. "What difference do those details make? Do you want this madness to stop or not?"
I considered his offer. If his plan worked, the rioters could be stopped. Lives could be saved. Apparently they were passing around devices that had a locked, violent demeanor pre-programmed within them. But his story didn't add up fully for me.
"I don't get it," I said. "I thought the holographic systems only projected the mood of the wearer. How can they change that mood even if they're malfunctioning?"
Kleber rolled his eyes.
"You really want to hear about this?"
"Yes, I do."
"Think about it," he said. "The Tau projectors have to read a mood to correctly interpret it. They actually take mental and emotional impressions. But what if those devices could transmit the mood, not just receive it?"
I stared at him and my jaw sagged open.
"You're somehow involved in this?
You built something that influenced their moods? You should get permed."
Kleber became angry. "Oh, I get it. You're one of those people who hate entrepreneurs. There's no place for innovation in the Empire."
"It's not that. You've done something illegal and obviously dangerous."
"I've broken no galactic law," he assured me. "The devices are for distribution in this star system only, a purely internal matter."
"So what? You've killed thousands, maybe millions."
"No one ever appreciates a good product until it's proven," he grumbled. "Imagine the profits we could have made here. What if these people were feeling down, but with the twiddle of a knob they could make themselves feel happy? Such a product would change lives. It was a gold mine. There are countless millions of Tau, and many of them are rich."
"The projectors don't work, Kleber,"
I pointed out. "They actually do work. A little too well." "Okay, let's forget about that. Are you going to open this door and let me end these riots or not?"
I hesitated, then sighed. He had me. Even if he was the root of this disaster, I had to help him stop it. I touched the key to the lock and the door slid open. Inside, two surprised non-com techs turned to face us.
"Who are you?" they demanded. "Did you escape the modules?"
"Yes,"
Kleber said, stepping into the control room like he owned the place.
"I can't find any other officers aboard. I wanted to make sure this chamber was secure."
They frowned at him and even more so at me.
"I'm sorry, sir, but you aren't authorized to even be on this deck. We have to ask you to leave."
"Where's your commander?"
"Our Centurion was in the modules when they were released, as far as we can tell. We've been communicating with the Skrull. We're maneuvering the ship to catch up with them before they make a disastrous re-entry.
Excellent, Klaiba said. But could you tell me why that indicator is flashing red?
Both the techs turned toward their boards in concern. Klaiba produced a sidearm from his tunic and shot them both in the back. I made a choking sound that matched the surprised gasps of the techs as they sank to the deck plates.
What the hell?
I demanded, grabbing his wrist. I pushed the muzzle of my snap rifle into his belly with my other hand.
Hands off, specialist, he said in a commanding tone.
Where did you get that weapon? I demanded.
He shrugged. You've been inattentive.
Drop it!
Reluctantly, he let it go. We'd fought hand to hand before, and I could tell he didn't want a repeat performance.
They had to die, he told me. Did you really think they were going to let me aim and fire their broadsides without authority?
No, I admitted, but you didn't have to kill them.
Klaiba shook his head as if I were a grade-A fool.
Loose ends destroy the best of plans. Come now, we have to work fast. These men will be revived eventually.
I held on to him, and the barrel of my snap rifle continued to prod his guts.
Why didn't you kill me with that hidden weapon? I asked.
He brightened.
I don't know, but I think I've started to like you. A true rebel. You remind me of my youth.
I laughed. Right. I think I've been lucky so far, and I always made sure you were walking in front of me. Klaiba shrugged and pointed at the controls.
More Tau citizens are turning into rogue rioters every hour.
Heaving a sigh, I let go of him. My every instinct was to fill his gut with pellets, but I didn't do it. If he could stop these riots, he could save the station, and maybe the entire system. We moved to the control console. It wasn't overly complex, but I didn't know how to operate it. I could tell after a few minutes that Klaiba was having trouble, too. We should have kept those techs alive at gunpoint, I said. They would have been helpful now.
I've got it, Klaiba announced a moment later. Touch this security module while my hand is on it, then touch the one over there.
What's this one?
I said, walking over to the hump of tin-colored metal he'd indicated.
That's the firing control. The other console lets me aim.
I bared my teeth thoughtfully. I was a weaponeer, but these boards were more like a starship's piloting control system. The controls were simple and manual. They were all touchscreen-based, and there were numbers displayed everywhere. Sucking in a breath and baring my teeth, I touched the modules he'd indicated. He made some adjustments, and the ship began making odd noises in response. My eyes crawled toward the ceiling. Above me, huge automated cannons were traversing, locking on to the newly designated target. The sounds were ominous, like those you might hear in a vast ship below the waterline. I found a switch on the panel that opened the blast shields and flipped it. The scene outside was alarming. Two of the cannons were in view, or at least their long barrels were. They thrust out over my viewpoint, aiming down toward the planet. They reminded me of factory smokestacks. The shadows they cast were stark in the blaze of the distant sun.
Damn it, McGill!
Klaiba complained as he looked up and saw what I'd done.
We can't fire with the blast shields open.
I looked at him, and the barrel of my snap rifle swiveled so that it aimed directly at him. I wanted to make sure you weren't aiming at the station, I said.
And why would I do that, my paranoid friend?
Because you're scared to death, I said. Everyone who has the power and motive to execute you is on that station.
You think I'm that selfish?
Yes, I do, old Silver. No one lives as long as you have in a Legion, not even Legion Germanica, without being very careful. He stared at me, now and then casting involuntary glances down at the barrel of my weapon.
Is this some kind of threat? Some kind of final card play you've been planning?
I wish it was, I admitted, but I've been playing this game by ear from the start. Klaiba chuckled and turned his attention back to the controls.
I'll close the doors, fire one salvo, and open them again. You'll get a front row seat as the strike lands.
At that moment, I wished I didn't have a gun on him. I wished he was doing this without my knowledge. The fact I was standing there with a rifle in my hand, contemplating allowing this lunatic to operate a warship single-handedly, was a testament to how desperate I'd become.
No, I said finally. Not yet. What? Claver demanded. They'll overrun the station soon. You saw that street battle.
They might win anyway.
Not without new troops. The legions can't keep churning out fresh fighters. If the supply is cut off on the other side, we might win. Every minute you delay is lowering the odds.
The trouble is, I told him, I don't trust you. Not at all.
I can understand that, he admitted. But you're going to have to in this case, son. We're losing this fight. You can see that, can't you? We've lost ground every day on the station from the very first day.
Because of your stupid get-rich-quick scheme.
A product, not a scheme. A failed product, that's all it was.
My eyes narrowed as I stared at old Silver. I could tell he was tense but trying to look nonchalant. He wanted to fire the broadsides, and it was probably for the reasons he'd stated. But I couldn't be sure. The guy was too tricky for his own damned good. All right, I said finally, expelling a deep breath I'd been holding. But if these doors go back up and the station is hit, I'm telling you, as God is my witness, I'm blowing you away. And no one, I mean no one, will ever revive your sorry ass.
I accept your conditions. Hit the damn switch.
I reached out, and I did it. The massive doors rolled shut and the starlight was cut out. Seconds later, the broadsides fired. I could feel a concussion wave rolling through the ship. The shock staggered me and almost knocked me off my feet, despite the fact the control room had special dampening systems. Strangely, there wasn't as much of a roar as one might have expected. The barrels were out in space, and much of the energy had been released into the void. The only noise and vibration we felt was due to recoil alone. I stabbed at the switch. The blast doors rolled back up more slowly than I'd remembered. Craning my neck, I could see trails of gas following a shower of 16 projectiles. They'd already hit the atmosphere, propelled by the railgun system at incredible speeds that were best measured as a percentage of the speed of light. The shells were punching their way down through thin layers of gas toward the endless city that sprawled below. It was nighttime down there, and lights twinkled as witless Tau citizens went about their routines without any idea of what was falling from the skies above them. I felt sick, wondering how many would die as collateral damage to stop the cancer Claver had released. The shells brightened as they dug deeper into the atmosphere. I knew that was the outer shielding, a combination of a projected field and burning ceramics. To prevent disintegration on entry into the atmosphere, they were heavily protected.
Right on target, whispered Claver.
What have we done?
I asked. We've saved a world, that's what. The cancer had to be cut out. Don't blame yourself, boy.
I frowned at him.
Blame myself for what?
He nodded toward the scene below. The salvo had reached ground and 16 interlocked white flashes flared. Almost instantly, these impacts were obscured by the expanding clouds of dust and debris. Glowing shock waves rippled in concentric circles, destroying miles of buildings and people.
I didn't know we were going to hit them that hard, I said, horrified. We should have fired just one round.
You have to be sure with cancer, Claver said. Any surgeon will tell you that. When they cut on you, most of what they take out is good, solid flesh. You know that, don't you?
I didn't look at him or acknowledge him. I was too shocked by what I was seeing below us. I'd never witnessed a galactic warship's broadside striking a target before. Hell, I don't know if any human being ever had. The destruction was terrific. The white flashes had given way to a lurid red glow under the billowing clouds of dust. I saw something. Something like a black, thick strand coming out of that mess of destruction. As I watched, the strand moved upward, curling and whipping like a snake in slow motion.
The umbilical,
I said, almost unable to breathe.
That strike! You hit the base of the umbilical!
That's when he nailed me. I have to admit Klaber's timing was masterful. I'd looked at him not 10 seconds before, but I'd spent the subsequent moments staring down in horror as the magnitude of the disaster I'd allowed to occur sank in. The umbilical had been cut. The station had been set adrift. And I'd let it happen. My skull exploded in white pain, and I sank to my knees. I knew then I'd made the wrong choice in trusting old Silver.
Chapter 29. If there's one thing my mama can confirm, should you ever have the chance to ask her, it's that I have a hard head. There have been times in my life she's told me that I should have been stone dead by all rights, like the day she backed into me with the family tram while I zoomed by on my air cycle, or the time I fell off the fourth-story balcony of our apartment and landed headfirst on a pine tree. On both those occasions, plus a few others, medical types had later tapped, prodded, and scanned my cranium to see if I'd suffered a crack. It had never happened. Unfortunately, I'm not immune to pain. My brain, that lump of gray and white matter that resides within my thick skull, was protesting with the most violent of headaches. But as was usually the case in these situations, I stayed conscious throughout the trauma. As I fell, I spun around onto my back. Klaver stood over me with a wrench in his hand. It was a wickedly heavy thing built for twisting open hatches and the like. The gleaming end of it had the look of worn steel. The tool had clearly been well used by a dozen strong men in the past. Stunned, I lay there with eyelids fluttering as Klaver's arms rose up for a second strike. He had the wrench in both hands, and he was going for an all-out home run this time. His face was screwed up with the effort of it, his teeth bared like those of a killer ape smashing down a rival. I didn't need much brain power to figure out he was going to bash my face in with his next blow. My numb fingers squeezed. The snap rifle in my hand began to chatter. I didn't even know where it was aiming. I barely cared. Just hearing the sound of it was enough for me. My aim wasn't too good. The recoil from the snap rifle, although mild, helped out. The gun kicked upward in my weak grip. I barely managed to hang on to the trigger to keep it hammering out tiny rounds. The first shower of pellets splattered the ceiling of the fire control room. Dozens of orange sparks flashed up there before the recoil slewed my aim farther upward. I drew a line across Klaver's belly, stitching him with at least 10 projectiles. They ripped upward through his body, and a few stabbed right up into his skull. Snap rifles fire a lot of rounds quickly, but each bullet is small, about the size of a BB. At the speed the rounds were traveling, it didn't much matter. They tore right through the man's unprotected body and blew bigger holes out the back of him than they made going in. Klaver never landed his second blow with the wrench. Instead, he sprawled out on the deck beside me. It took several long minutes of groaning before I could get to my feet. There was blood in my hair, and more of it ran down my back. If a bio had been around to witness the situation, they might well have recommended I start over again with a fresh body. And the way I felt at that moment, I might have agreed with them. But in the end, I managed to get to my knees, and then my feet. Swaying, I took the opportunity to look at old Silver. He was a mess. His eyes were bulging in shock, showing all the whites like boiled eggs with blue yolks. There was blood and fragments of bone everywhere. "I hope you stay dead," I told the corpse. Then I looked down at the planet below us. The destruction I saw down there made me want to puke. I scanned the billowing clouds of dust, rubbing my head absently as I did so. It looked as if a meteor strike had landed. A big one. Gathering my wits and my strength, I staggered out of there and headed for the modules. Claver had only ejected the three occupied units. Maybe there were more people aboard. I could have contacted the Skrull, but what good would that do? They were hired hands here. They had no stake in this battle. If everyone in this system killed one another, they barely cared, as long as we didn't molest them. In fact, they couldn't interfere or even disobey an order from a legitimate source without incurring the wrath of the Galactics. Unfortunately, I wasn't a legitimate authority. I was an enlisted man. I was mere cargo as far as they were concerned. That meant I couldn't control this ship, not even with the Galactic Key. I could control individual subsystems, but I couldn't fly the ship itself. The Skrull would only listen to an officer. Limping around the modules, I found no one. I cursed and raved. Claver had been thorough, and his Germanica victims had been obedient. They'd all sealed themselves in their modules and been promptly ejected into space. I took stock of what resources I had left. There wasn't much. I could commandeer a pinnace and fly back to the station, but that didn't look like a very good idea right now. The station might well be doomed and spiraling in a decaying orbit. At the very least, it was full of deadly rioters and even more deadly legionnaires, all of whom had to know by now I was to be killed on sight. The broadsides were still under my command, I realized. But who was I going to blast next? I barely understood their operation, much less how to precisely target them. Besides which, I had no intention of causing even more misery and pain today. I turned my thoughts back to the modules. I took a quick look at the non-standard units. There was the tech module, a combination of laboratory and workshop. The armory was reasonably well equipped with thousands of weapons I had no need of. Then I came across a bio module. Here, as on every ship, it was called Blue Deck. I stepped inside and had a look around. Soon I had a flesh printer in my hands and was running the wand over the back of my head. Pain relievers, fresh skin cells, and a trickle of stimulants made me feel better almost immediately. My eyes drifted to the locked subchamber. There was a revival unit in there, I thought. There had to be. I shut off the flesh printer and walked to the door. It was locked, but a touch of the key solved that. Inside the room, I regarded the dormant revival machine. I hated these things. To this day, I didn't see how bio people could handle working with them all day, every day. They were slimy, disturbing, and they smelled pretty bad, too. Due to an unusually colorful past in Legion Varus, I was able to operate this strange piece of equipment. I needed more people. I couldn't run this ship alone. Accordingly, I tapped the priority list and stabbed the go button. The machine would decide who I needed first, and I trusted its judgment. Whoever was on the top of that list was the best person I had available to me. The revival machine gurgled and sloshed inside. The thought that it was working to grow a new human being was freaky, but I was beyond feeling such emotions. My mind drifted to the Tau below. Sure, they were an overpopulated, irritating species, but I didn't think they deserved to be slaughtered wholesale for all that. Before the revival machine finally signaled it was finished, I'd found the stimulant cabinet and partaken of the ampules inside. I had a faint smile on my face, and my aching head was a distant worry. The revival unit's maw fell open with a wet sound. I sighed and got out the spatula-like tool. Feet. Bare feet. It was giving birth to a woman by the look of it. She was small and shapely. I got the tongue of the shovel-like tool under her butt and pulled, but she didn't come out right away. I had to tug at her feet, grunting with effort. She finally flew out with a popping sound and a gush of thick fluids. Wrinkling my nose, I struggled to get her onto a gurney without accidentally injuring her. I assumed she was an officer, probably a Germanic bio. When she was functional, she'd have a lot of questions for me. I didn't want to even contemplate what answers I was going to provide her. The woman was attractive and seemed way too young to be an officer. I had her on the table and she tried to speak, but couldn't. I checked the readings, squinting at them. "Atrial fibrillation?" I read aloud. No one answered. No one was there to tell me what to do. A bad grow right off? Crap. I considered grabbing her and shoving her into the recycling slot. She was barely conscious and she wouldn't remember this short lifetime. But I couldn't do it for some reason. There was something familiar about this woman. I couldn't put my finger on it, but it was there. Unlimbering the defib equipment, I shocked her repeatedly. After the fourth try, she came awake, puking and gasping. I checked the reading. "All clear," I said, smiling. I'd done it, despite the fact my body was operating on stems and sporting a serious head injury. I felt mildly proud. The woman rolled away from me then, curling up in a ball on the gurney. Then I knew the truth. She had a distinctive set of hips. Her shapely posterior was more than a little familiar. I'd stared at her for years. Of course, I'd never seen her without clothing, but a man like me knows a shape that stands out. "Turov?" I asked. She coughed and weakly struggled to sit up.
"McGill?"
she asked.
"I'm going to kill you. Over and over again."
"Yes, sir," I said. "You probably are. Did you know your hair is a different color?"
"I dye it, you idiot."
"Oh, right. But you're also a lot younger than the last time I saw you. Haven't you backed up your body over the last couple of decades?" She glared at me with red eyes.
"I haven't dyed it for a long time in the service of the legions."
I nodded slowly. "Yeah, but you look like you just joined up."
"Are you high or something?"
she asked. I thought about the pain meds I'd partaken liberally. I smiled a small smile. "A little, yeah." She produced a sound of disgust.
"Give me some damned clothes."
Smart cloth soon covered her body. Like a wrapper closing and cinching, flaps slid over her breasts and thighs. I was sorry to see them go. "It's going to be hard on you as an imperator," I pointed out. "You look like a kid. In fact, you've got to be younger than I am now." Glaring, she twisted up her lips.
"Why the hell did you revive me?"
My mouth opened, and I almost told her I'd hit the priority revive button, but some part of my brain was still operating. I knew you never told a girl that chance had brought you together. She had to be special. "I needed help," I said. "I couldn't think of anyone better than you for the job." She narrowed her eyes at me disbelievingly. Then they slid down to the snap rifle I still had on a strap over my back. There was blood on my hands and my face and everywhere. Her eyes widened and she bit her lip.
"You're sure this isn't some kind of odd fantasy of yours?"
she asked.
"Did you revive me for a chance to make me suffer? I hadn't thought you were that kind of a man."
She sounded confident enough, but there was a new note of worry in her voice. She'd finally picked up on the fact that there was no one around except me and her. It was true, I realized as I thought about it. I could murder her right now. After stuffing her body into the recycling chute, no one would be the wiser. "I'm not a fiend," I said. "I needed a ranking officer to help me handle this emergency. I immediately thought of you."
"What emergency?"
What's the last thing you remember?"
"I was in the lobby outside my office, and that rodent Claver shot me."
"Right. Well, A lot has happened since then. Can you walk?
Certainly,
she said, batting away my helping hand. She got down off the gurney and almost did a facer right there. I was ready for it and managed to grab onto her before she hit the floor.
Get off,
she shouted. I ignored her complaints and stood her up like a doll. I supported her elbow as she took her first steps despite her protests. Soon she had the hang of walking again. I can tell it's been a while since you went through a revive, I said.
This isn't going to get you out of execution if that's your plan,
she told me.
Anyone could have revived me.
Well, maybe not, I said.
What's that supposed to mean? Give me a headset now.
Just give me a few minutes to show you the situation. Turov eyed me.
So, I am your prisoner?
You won't get any pleasure out of this, McGill.
I assure you of that.
The revival machine began to churn and slosh, creating fresh life. I could only guess who it had chosen to be second off the line. That process would take a few minutes, so I thought now was as good a time as any to re-educate the Imperator. I could tell she wasn't going to believe anything I said, so I figured the only thing I could do was show her the situation. I took her to the fire control room. As we walked down the echoing, empty passages, I wondered why the machine had chosen to revive Imperator Turov. I guessed that it had decided such a high-ranking individual deserved special treatment. Probably back on the station, the bio people had been too busy churning out combat troops and throwing them at the front lines to bother with wasting time on the brass. They hadn't had time to pamper the officers. They'd needed fighting troops to stop the enemy advance. By the time I managed to get Turov to the fire control center, she'd figured out she was on Minotaur, and that there was something massively wrong with that.
Why is this place empty?
Turov demanded.
You can't have killed everybody.
I didn't bother to answer her question.
Where's the staff?
She demanded.
Where are the Germanica legionnaires? What have you done, you crazy fuck-up?
I gestured toward Claver's body, which was still sprawled on the floor and staring. Right then, I decided to take a few liberties with the truth. Sir, this situation is admittedly hard to explain, but I've been chasing your murderer for about a day now. I caught up with him here and found him raving about stopping the attack on the station. Explaining quickly, I told her about Claver's claims that the hologram projection equipment the Tau Civis wore had been tampered with, and that he'd done it himself. Then I explained Claver's belief that it was the root of all the riots, and the production of such systems had to be stopped. By the time I got this far, she wandered to the viewports and gazed outside. Horror materialized on her pretty face.
You've destroyed the planet.
Not at all, sir, I said. First of all, Claver did it. Secondly, only one small section of the planet has been damaged. He only got off one shot with the broadsides before I killed him. Turov looked at me, then Claver.
He struck you?
Yes. I've got new skin itching and growing right over the hair on my scalp.
Incredible,
she said.
This is an unbelievable diplomatic breach. I thank you for stopping him, and I now understand why you revived me.
You do?
Yes, of course, McGill. I may look like I'm 19, but I'm not naive.
19, I thought in shock. Could she really be that young? Looking at her, I knew that she could. 39 in the mind and 19 in the flesh. That was going to be confusing for everyone.
You're hoping to curry favor with me,
she continued.
You killed my killer and apparently stopped the same madman from destroying an entire world. I'm now in the strange position of being in your debt. Perhaps millions of Tau are as well. But I'm not sure about one thing.
I said, not certain which of her leaps of logic she might be questioning.
Why won't you let me communicate with the station?
Oh, that, I said.
Then I showed her the station, which had drifted almost out of view, and explained that the broadsides had disconnected the umbilical. Her eyes widened to an improbable size.
"I don't believe it," she said.
She looked at me, and her shock was infectious.
"He's killed them all. That must be why I wasn't revived on the station. They might all be dead already if there is a hull breach. Think of it. Germanica and Varys wiped out together, all at once. Earth has never lost two of her legions in a single campaign, James. Not since Roman times."
"The Battle of Teutoburg Forest," I said thoughtfully.
"Yes. I'm surprised you know of it. I'm glad Varys still teaches her lore to enlisted men."
"Let's call the station and learn the truth," I suggested. I gave her a headset, and she pulled it over her head. She hesitated before opening the channel. She looked at me for a moment, and I could see in her eyes that she felt lost. I knew that she didn't want to verify that we might well be the last living human beings in this star system, or that we soon would be. Her face was so full of youth and relative innocence that I found myself feeling differently toward her. I knew it was just my mind responding to what it was seeing rather than what I knew her to be. But I couldn't help it. Standing before me, Imperata Turov was a fine-looking, frightened young lady. I wanted to hold her in my arms and comfort her. I told myself I must be completely nuts, but that's how I felt. Chapter 30. Could it be that a younger version of a person was really a different person, more like a relative to the original than a direct copy? That was what I was wondering about as I watched Imperata Turov attempting to communicate with our legions on the station that drifted nearby. There was no response, and her eyes began to redden. What was that expression? I'd never seen it on Turov's face before. Was she actually going to break down and cry? Partly her emotional state had to be related to her recent revival. It had been a very long time for her, and that must be affecting her thinking. I've been there many times myself. Nothing makes a man reconsider his place in the universe more than dying and being reconstructed from slime. It was more than that in Turov's case. Her new body was too young for her to be the same person she'd been before she died. People underwent vast changes as they aged. Those changes weren't all due to the slow rerouting of our neural pathways, what we called memories and experiences. Our brains aged just like the rest of our bodies did. Our hair turned gray and our organs wore out. Our sleep patterns changed, and the way our minds worked changed as well. Younger people had more musculature. They were much better at healing and scored very differently on IQ tests. Their brains worked faster, but were also more chaotic, impulsive, and emotional. I could see these realities playing out on Turov's face. She wasn't the same bitter woman she'd been the last time I'd seen her. She was battling with youth, uncertainty, and surging hormones. For me, whenever I died, I lost less than a year of time, so I was pretty much the same guy I'd been for years. I'd gotten a little wiser, maybe, but not much. Perhaps that was why people kept telling me to grow up, but I never seemed to do so. Imperata Turov had frozen herself in time. Today, she'd returned as she had been in her youth. Everyone thought they wanted to be young again, but it wasn't going to be easy for her, I could tell already. Struggling to drop these thoughts and worry about our current situation, I waited for her to give up attempting to communicate with Legion Varys, then Germanica. She put the headset aside and stared at it.
"I think they're all dead," she said.
"What? The station has lost some atmosphere, but it can't be that bad yet." She shook her head.
"The rioters. They were attacking hard before I was killed. They might have overwhelmed the Legion. They outnumber us thousands to one."
I stared out into space, shocked. How could they all be dead? The battle must have been going worse than I'd believed. I felt bad about having run out of there chasing Claver.
Some of the civilian Tau are still alive, at least, she continued. I heard some traffic, but nothing intelligible on our command channels. Possibly we've lost our communication stations, and there are still knots of troops fighting aboard the station.
We both gazed out the viewport.
What are we going to do, sir?
I asked her.
I'll contact the Skrull. We'll get Minotaur moving and circle the station to assess the situation. Stay on the open channels.
Good idea, sir, I said. But I request permission to return to the revival unit. It's processing another birth, and I need to be on hand to keep the person alive.
Oh, of course. Do that immediately. You're sure you're qualified?
Not at all, sir. But I've done it before, and we haven't got anyone else. I turned to go, but she called me back.
James.
Imperator? She reached out a small, smooth hand and squeezed my arm.
Thank you. I'm going to formally drop the charges against you.
That would be appreciated, sir. I rushed out, knowing that the revival unit was probably spitting out its next victim any minute. I gave my head a little shake as I trotted down echoing passages. The look in her eyes. She'd been thinking about kissing me. Call me a fool, call me crazy, but I'd seen that look before. Plenty of times. Reaching the revival unit, I was in for a new shock. There had already been a birth, a male who'd fallen out of the maw and turned blue on the floor. I scrambled forward and tried to bring him back, but I'm not a bio. I'm a front-line fighter. I failed. Cursing and breathing through clenched teeth, I carried the body over to the chute. I knew I should recycle him, but I couldn't do it. I didn't even know the man's name. He was dead, dead in my arms, and I'd caused it because I hadn't been there when he'd needed my help. I felt pain in my chest, a pang of guilt. To steel my resolve, I reminded myself that millions had died today and the dying wasn't over with yet. I let the body slump on the floor, pushing it out of the way with the toe of my boot. There was just too much crap going on today, and I refused to shove him into a wood chipper. I'd heard the recycle machine buzz in the past, doing its grisly work, and I just couldn't take that right now. I was on my last nerve. This shitty job isn't my shitty job, I said aloud to nobody. I walked to the console, determined. I flipped through the touchscreen interface, scrolling through to the bio specialists. To hell with letting this machine decide who popped out next, I was going to make the choice. So many dead. I could scarcely believe it. Never in all my years with Varus had there been such a disaster. I knew there were two legions worth of names on that list, and that was too grim to contemplate. Just reviving them all would take weeks. Flipping through the names of various bio people, I automatically selected Legion Varus troops over Germanica. Germanica had given me the gift of old silver, so screw them. I figured they could wait their turn in a very long line. There was a name that stood out to me, one which made me pause immediately. Anne Grant. I almost selected her name, but stopped. She would hate me for this. Thousands of revives? Work without rest for long days? Why do that to her? I decided to let the poor girl rest. I kept scrolling with a new goal in mind. I found another name, one I hadn't had the pleasure of dealing with for a long time. Centurion Thompson. Long ago, back on my first campaign on Steel World, she and I had not gotten along. She was a bio and an officer. She'd done everything she could to perm me, and I'd hung on to life despite her best efforts. Smiling, I tapped her name and confirmed. Who deserved to be set up as a slave to this machine other than my least favorite high-ranking bio? I couldn't think of a better candidate. Then I charged the tanks and rushed back to find Galena, the Imperator. She was still standing on the deck of the fire control room. The view out the front portals had changed. No longer were we staring down at the planet. Instead, we had turned and were gazing at the station. The massive structure looked like it was operating normally, but then I saw escaping gas near the bottom. It looked like a jet of steam flowing out into space. "What's that?" I asked her. Turov stared without turning around.
"At first, I thought the lower lip of the station was touching the atmosphere. But I don't think that's the case. She's venting, overheating. Now that she's drifting, she's getting too much sun."
"I assume you got into contact with the Skrull?"
"Yes. They've been monitoring the station, but not interfering, as they put it. How could a spacefaring crew watch such an ongoing disaster so callously, silently waiting for millions to die, without bothering to lift a finger?"
I didn't answer her. We both knew the truth. The Empire made such insane levels of caution a necessity for all frontier civilizations. We had to work the harsh calculus every day. Breaking a galactic law, no matter how good the cause, could result in disaster for one's entire species. It was the kind of situation that revealed the worst side of the Empire. "I'm reviving a bio now," I told her. "I've got an idea. I recall Claver saying he'd ejected several modules full of Germanica's troops." She turned to me.
"Yes, the Skull reported that. What a psychopath, to commit his own people to such a death."
"Right," I said. "But what if their orbits haven't decayed yet? Maybe we could retrieve a module or two and save them." She brightened.
"Excellent thinking, specialist."
She contacted the Skrull, and soon the ship swung around in space. We were skimming over the clouds, and a tiny box-like object grew in perspective. Turov looked at her tapper, listening to the Skrull at the same time.
"Just one left," she said to me. "The others, it's too late. Their orbits decayed almost immediately."
Just one module. 100 Germanica legionnaires. I hated to be choosy at a moment like this, but I really hoped the troops aboard this one didn't recognize me. They might tell Turov a different story about my interactions with Claver. I hadn't been 100% forthcoming about my involvement with him. "Gotta go check the revival machine again, if you don't mind, sir."
"Of course. Go."
Trotting down the passages again, I made it back to the machine before the maw opened this time. Curling my lips and wrinkling my nose, I endured a shower of fluids when the maw finally sagged open. The body of a woman slipped out. She was thin and had a pinched face, but she came out kicking. She coughed and panted. There was a wild look in her eye. "You're all right," I told her, helping her onto a table. "Get off me," she managed to say, slapping at my hands weakly. I smiled. This one wouldn't need a defib or some other procedure I was even more hazy on. She was in fighting shape, fresh out of the oven. "Centurion Thompson," I said, "I hereby declare you a good grow." She looked around, dazed but ornery.
"What's this? James McGill? What the hell are you doing in a revival room? Where are the bio people?"
"I'm it, sir," I said. "Sorry to disappoint."
"I don't understand,"
she said, looking around with squinting eyes.
"This isn't even the right module. Are we on the station?"
"No, sir," I said. "We're on Minotaur. We've lost contact with the station. We fear the Legion... they might have wiped." Her gaze became distant, unfocused. I knew that look. She was reliving the circumstances of her death.
"I remember now. I thought it must have been a dream. They flooded right in, coming out of underground tunnels and air shafts, while we struggled with the more surge down the streets and right into the front door. I watched the monitors. The troops killed thousands upon thousands, but they kept coming."
"It's best not to think about that too much right now," I said. "Just think of it as a dream." Her eyes came back to me, but they looked through me. She was still seeing that other place, that other time.
"They crawled up the walls," she said. "They ripped men apart barehanded. I was working on Blue Deck. They came in and killed us all in the end. They had guns. Our guns.
They were stripping the dead as they came, and we couldn't stop them. McGill, you have to—
Her voice had been rising and her eyes widening. Her breathing had increased to a hyperventilating pant. I slapped her lightly on the cheek. She recoiled and snarled at me.
I'll have you up on charges,
sir, I said in a reasonable tone. You're going into memory shock.
I wasn't,
she snapped.
I'm fine. Get me some clothes.
I did as she asked, and she climbed down to the floor while toweling herself off. About 1 second later, she hit the deck with her butt. I grabbed her elbow, but wasn't fast enough.
You let me fall,
she said blearily. Frowning, I flashed a meter into her eyes. The dilation was on the high side, but the machine didn't register any brain damage.
How long has it been since you've been revived, Centurion Thompson? I asked her.
I don't know. Years.
Nodding, I helped her to her feet.
Try to pull it together, sir. You're just experiencing what every trooper feels when they come back to life after a bad death. It's all normal to us. Routine. Shake it off, sir.
She tried. I almost felt sorry for her, despite our bad past. She put her elbows on the table and slumped over it.
Can you get me some water?
She asked. I did as she asked and tapped at the revival machine. Time was wasting. I selected a senior bio off the list, a non-com Centurion Thompson was sure to know and be able to work with. She was going to need an assistant.
I've forgotten,
she said, sipping her water.
I've forgotten how much this sucks. You asked me how long it had been since I'd been revived?
Yes, sir, I did. She turned and looked at me. Her teeth were bared and her finger was up in an accusatory gesture.
Have you forgotten? It was you. The last time I was revived, it was after you murdered me.
I felt a little jolt of embarrassment. That had been years ago. I hadn't figured. I did the best to hide my dismay and shrugged.
Water under the bridge, sir. That unhappy misunderstanding is all in the past now.
Maybe for you it is,
she said.
Why the hell did you pick me to revive anyway?
I wanted the best, sir. I'm a heavy infantryman who takes lives wholesale rather than saving them. I'm not qualified to operate this system, and I wanted someone I knew could do the job.
Thompson blinked at me.
But I haven't done grunt work in one of these chambers. Never mind.
She seemed to get a grip on herself then. Often, people were like sobering drunks or sleepwalkers during their first moments in a new body. But she was pulling it together rapidly, I could see that. She stood straight and squared her shoulders. She was dressed now, and except for the fact her hair was wet and sticky, she looked almost normal.
All right, Specialist,
she said.
I must thank you for your confidence in me. I won't let Legion Varus down. Now, if you don't mind getting the hell out of my chambers, I've got work to do.
I gave her a small, tight smile and left. Out in the hallway, I allowed my expression to spread and widen. I grinned to myself, certain that there was one officer on this ship who was going to earn her pay today.
McGill,
a voice squawked in my earpiece. It was Turov, but her voice was higher pitched than it had been days ago, so I almost didn't recognize her.
Go ahead, Imperator.
Get down to the hangar. Move everything you can out of the way. The module is coming in hot.
I frowned. I don't understand, sir.
I'm telling you this isn't going to be a picture-perfect docking, Specialist. The module is tumbling, and we don't have time to make this pretty. We're going to suck it into the hangar and hope someone survives.
Sir, I can't recommend this course of action, I said as I began hustling down the tubes and passages toward the hangar. Maybe we should just let the module burn up and revive the troops when we can.
I'd do that, she said, but we need every gun we can get.
Her voice shifted again, sounding less professional.
There are ships coming toward us from the station now, McGill. They aren't responding to any kind of challenge, and the Skrulls say they're on a collision course.
My mind raced almost as fast as my feet. I was regretting the fact I'd taken off my armor to work in the bio lab, and there was no time to put it back on now. Turov had to be nuts to try this.
But, sir, they could be boarding parties. We can't let them get on to Minotaur.
They're coming directly toward us,
and they're already in too close now to use the broadsides. We've got some PD armament, but I'll be damned if I can get it working up here. I don't have the codes. We don't have any defenses, James.
Understood. What do you want me to do in the hangar?
I'm going to drop the field so the hangar will evacuate.